You are listening to a very special edition of the Punk News Podcast, where we play the Punk Connection on this week, the week of June 4, 2013.
Welcome to the Punk Connection. Here's your host, Johnny Gentile.
Thanks, Sound Guy Nairman. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Punk Connection, the game show where we ask punks about recent events in search of true romance. I'm your host, Johnny Gentile. Ladies and gentlemen, the game is simple. In a minute, I'll bring out one lucky bachelor. Then I'll ask three young ladies about this week's punk rock news events. The bachelor will decide which answer he likes the best. And at the end, he'll pick one lucky lady, and those two will have a night out on the town. So, without further ado, let's meet our eligible bachelor, John O'Diener of the Swellers.
Yeah, me!
Drummer and co-vocalist for the Swellers, Jono has been touring for the past decade. He describes himself as tall, dark, and obvious, likes to spend evenings by a bearskin rug and a fireplace, and he's turned on by interesting conversation, as he is turned on by large machinery. Jono, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Johnny?
Good, good. Jono, so what's happening with the Swellers right now?
We just signed to a label called No Sleep Records. We are finishing our seven-month break, which is the longest break we've ever had as a band in the last, like, 8 years. And we're getting ready to go on Warped Tour in about 5 days.
Well, that's excellent. I'm sure you're excited. You last released Running Out of Places to Go. Was that a satisfying release for you, Jono?
Yeah, that sounded very sexual as well.
Well, along those lines, Jono, I know what a Sex Pistol is, and I know what a Clash is, but what is a Sweller, Jono?
It's a boner. It's a big old boner.
So you're basically an alternative for the Sex Pistols, if you will.
Well, technically it's like a wave maker. But also, you know, boner gets the kids all riled up, you know? So that's fun to talk about.
Well, that's very true. And I'll tell you, Jono, speaking about getting the kids riled up, I've seen the girls, and they are all knockouts, let me tell you. Are you ready to meet them?
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, let's bring out our girls. Contestant number one is Sarah Goodwin. She's a contributing editor at punknews.org. Sarah spent time in Ghana. She once met Ralph Nader and now lives in Scotland, I believe. Sarah describes herself as an adventurer with the heart of Borium. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Good. Sarah, what are you doing over in Scotland right now?
Oh, I was just traveling over for a bit. I've actually come back to the States the last week.
Are you in Gainesville right now?
Well, in between. I'm moving back in about 10 days now.
So are you excited to get back to the mecca of orgcore punk rock?
Oh, of course, of course. I've missed it dearly.
Well, excellent. And contestant number two, as I'm sure you listeners know out there, is Kira Wisneski. Kira is pals with Intergalactic Barbarians Gwar. She teaches punk rock jumping rope, and she once flipped off Ray Romano. She describes herself as Abigail Adams, but with more temerity. Kira, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing delightful.
So what's happening with this punk rock jump roping thing, Kira?
I became a certified punk rope instructor this past weekend, and it's pretty fun. I'm actually not the most fit person, but it encourages fitness and fun by doing jump roping to punk rock songs, and then also mixing it up with like relay races and kind of like school game drills, and it's a lot of fun.
What's the best song to punk rock jump rope to?
Well, I'm real excited that I developed a relay this past week to the Bouncing Souls' Here We Go.
Well, that's excellent. And lastly, but not leastly, is contestant number three, Samantha Barrett. Samantha enjoys going to museums, coloring books, and watching Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. Now, you know, Samantha, I was speaking with the producers before the show, and they told me that you're actually married.
Yes, I am.
So, Samantha, what are you doing on the Punk Connection if you're married? Is there trouble in the roost?
No trouble. I'm just expanding my harem of women and other guys.
So you're just exploring your options, if you will.
Definitely.
Well, fair enough. Oh, and I forgot to mention that Samantha is an interviewer for punknews.org, and she just had an excellent interview just about 2 days ago. Isn't that right, Samantha?
Yeah.
And who did you interview?
A Small Brown Bike.
And what were you interested to learn about Small Brown Bike?
Their new album recollected, and whether or not they are going to do anything in regards to touring.
Well, fantastic. You can check that out at punknews.org. And listeners, don't get too excited. When we get back right after these messages, we'll start the game. But here's a message from our sponsors. Oh, hello there. My name is Johnny Gentile. You might remember me as the host of such game shows as The Punk Connection, Press Your Crust, or The Family Rude. But today I'm here to talk to you about your most important asset, your health. Are you being held down by arthritis, diabetes, or a hernia? Are you not able to enjoy the full gambit of your life, spend time with your family, or play with your grandkids because of such conditions? Well, I'm here to tell you how to get healthy. You should visit Baldy Long Hair Records. At Baldy Long Hair Records, you can check out the 6-song cassette released by The Disconnects, called The Disconnects Are Healthy. It's full of 6 classic rock songs that are sure to get you out of that wheelchair and dancing around like you were 50 years younger. No longer let arthritis, diabetes, or incontinence hold you down. So once again, this is The Disconnects Are Healthy, and the track is called Living in the USA. We are back on the Punk News Punk Connection, and we're going to get our game started right away. The first issue that we're going to be talking about on today's Punk News Connection is with Against Me. Quite surprisingly, Large Jane Grace, who's the leader of Against Me, announced that Fat Mike of NoFX and Adam Willard are going to be joining them for the latest recording sessions. Adam Willard isn't so much of a surprise because he's drummed with Against Me before, but Fat Mike, I guess, was kind of a left-field choice as people didn't see that selection coming. Against Me was on Fat Records for a little while, although it's unclear if Fat Records and Against Me have had relations for the past 5 or 6 years. So I'm going to go to contestant number one, Sarah. Sarah, what do you think of Fat Mike and Adam Willard joining Against Me for the recording sessions of the new album, which is tentatively titled Transgender Dysphoria Blues, which is a concept story about a transgendered prostitute?
Yeah, no, I'm very much of the mind that I just really want to hear this record. I mean, I think it's really cool that Fat Mike and Adam Willard are there, but I've, as a fan, I'm just really excited to hear what's going to come out, and I've heard that it's been recorded and re-recorded, and, you know, all this other stuff is just kind of, you know, sidebar to me.
Do you think Fat Mike is a good choice for filling in for, I guess, bass duties?
Sure. I mean, he'll bring something, you know, different to the table, and that's always good to grow and expand, so.
Kira Wisniewski, contestant number two, what do you think of this, I guess, left field combination?
I think it's pretty good. I think it's I have a lot of same thoughts that Sarah has on the fact that I'm just, like, anxious to kind of hear the release. I am curious if they're going to just re-record everything, and if they're going to just re-record everything, how much creative freedom does Fat Mike have on this record? Have these songs, like, already been written, and is he just going to just play some songs that have already been written? And if that's the case, then I don't really understand why he's being brought in outside of, like, kind of, I guess, the star power, because it seems like if the album's already written, like, Laura could play bass, I'm sure, but I think it will be cool. I mean, Searching for a Form or Clarity came out on Fat Records, and so presumably Fat Mike at least had some sort of, like, you know, like, this is a good record, at least in that release. So I think it would, and I like that album despite, you know, what some people might think of that album. So I think that that could be an interesting kind of perspective and influence on this album. And yeah, I'm just excited to hear it, and I hope that it's rad.
You know, contestant number three, Samantha, a lot of times when albums start to get recorded, it halts, tries to get recorded again, halts, tries to get recorded again. A lot of the times the albums don't come out too well. Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses comes to mind, as well as a lot of other albums. Samantha, do you think this is the Chinese Democracy of punk rock?
I absolutely hope not. I feel that if, one, I'm very interested in what is going to come out of this, but I feel like if it's just Laura and she's bringing two other people, it might be a better idea to maybe start a new band, as you know, as this project is. I don't know how it's actually going to go. I'm quite skeptical, but you know, hope is not Chinese Democracy.
You know, Samantha, you mentioned that maybe they should go with a different name. Laura Jane Grace mentioned that perhaps they will go under a different name eventually after this record. Do you think they should stick with the name Against Me for this record, or should they use a different name?
Perhaps I think they should just do a different name.
How come?
Pretty much, as Kira mentioned, you know, we don't know how much Fat Mike is putting into it, or the other collaborator. But, you know, being that, that said, you know, usually whenever you change someone in a band, they do bring a little bit something into the band. So I don't think it's going to stay true to the true Against Me feel.
Very good. I wonder personally if this means that Against Me is going to become a broader platform. As all the Punk News listeners know, I'm a big fan of the Melvins. And the Melvins work with a whole bunch of different people. Right now, they exist in four incarnations at once, which means they've got a whole bunch of other collaborators. And I find that interesting because it means you don't have any expectations for the album, so whatever weirdness they deliver is usually interesting. I think this album's going to be interesting and weird, and I think it might be Against Me's best release to date. So tell me, Jono, which contestant answer did you like the best? One, two, or three, and why?
Let's see. I just realized how loud I'm talking in my own apartment. I mean, the game show.
You mean
set.
On our soundstage?
Yeah, because you flew me to LA and paid me to do this. let's see. Let's say contestant number two, because she was agreeing with the first, but elaborated a little more. one thing, too, I wanted to add in. I honestly don't think that Fat Mike is going to add too much to it. In a positive way. I think he's going to, you know, let the songs kind of speak for themselves and do their own thing. He's more of just like a contributing member, like on the recording, as opposed to songwriting. Cause I know Laura Jane is obviously, you know, experienced in that whole thing. So as far as like changing the name and everything, I think Against Me started with just Tom anyway. Well, when it was Tom, and then he had just the drummer. And then over time, you know, they had their whole lineup. And then now that it's even though it's half the lineup, it's still Laura Jane and one other person from the, I guess, the semi-original lineup. So I think number two will win my heart right now.
Well, fair enough. Why bring in Fat Mike at all, then, if he's just contributing to the recording? Do you think Fat Mike has a certain je ne sais quoi that he can add that other bassists can't add?
Yeah, actually. I think it was we recorded a record at the Blasting Room with Bill Stevenson and Jason Livermore, and they were saying that Fat Mike is one of the best studio bassists ever. It sucks because he's so underrated because he's such a phenomenal musician and songwriter. And apparently he does all of his things and usually one take at a time. Normally, you know, like with bass players, you have to punch in, you have to do all this other stuff to make the song perfect. But apparently he just nails it instantly, always has like perfect tone and like is just a great musician. So I think that's part of the reason they probably brought him in.
Well, John, I'm glad we had you on the special. We've already known you've got direct contact with Fat Mike, Bill Stevenson of the Descendants and Black Flag. What a wonderful contest. What a wonderful lucky bastard. Moving on to question number two is, I know a lot of the punk news kids were excited about this. Jeff Rosenstock of Bomb the Music Industry, which is currently either broken up or on hiatus, he's announced a solo project called the Summer 7 Club. He's basically releasing one 7-inch record with two songs on it, but then every 2 weeks for the rest of the summer, you get another song from him on in the email. It's a little bit different for Bomb the Music Industry, where they used to give away all the music for free. With this one, it sort of has like a token entry fee, if you will. I'm going to start with contestant number two, Kira Wisniewski. Kira, did you like the song? And what do you think of Jeff's new distribution ideas?
I think it's great. I think it's really positive. I've never really been a super Bomb the Industry fan, so it's not really my genre. But I think it's a really great way to get his music out and a really kind of cost-effective, neat, creative way. Like, it's only $10 to do it. So you would spend $10 on, you know, maybe not a 7-inch, but in this particular 7-inch you would. But you get all these bonus features, and they're not really that frivolous. I mean, you'll get music to your inbox every 2 weeks, and it's like you couldn't really get any simpler than that. So I think it's really rad, a great thing for the fans, and you know, more power to him to get his music out in a different kind of vehicle than the more traditional venues.
What'd you think of the song?
Oh, I thought it was fine.
Fair enough. Samantha, did you like the contestant number three, Samantha, did you like the song, and what do you think of the way they're distributing music? Because I know you've got certain connections to a record label, correct?
Kind of. We're friends with, Iron Pier Records.
That's right.
Yes. So, kind of. I'm also not a huge Bomb the Music Industry fan. The song that was on Punk News is, you know, it's okay. being that I'm not a fan of them. But yeah, like, it's, you know, it's pretty much, it's cost effective to do every couple weeks or a month or whatever, sending a download to you. You know, it's pretty much going to keep a fan happy just as long as they get it in on time. And, you know, having a keepsake vinyl and a lovely RPM adapter, that's, you know, pretty rad.
Samantha, what are some bands you like, just briefly?
Bouncing Souls, Hot Water Music.
If Bouncing Souls was going to sell a 7-inch for about 10 or 12 bucks with two songs a song every other week, would you get that? And would you think it's a fair value, I guess?
The Bouncing Souls have sold 7-inches every couple of weeks. It's something called Ghost on the Boardwalk. They did every couple months for a year, two or three songs on 7-inch, and it's, you know, a collector's item, I guess. But yes, and I did purchase every single one of them.
Fair. Contestant number one, Sarah Goodwin, can I get some Bomb the Music Industry love from you?
You can. I really liked Vacation a lot, their most recent record. The other stuff, I would love a track or two, and then the rest of it I'd kind of toss up. But so I ended up really liking the song. It just was kind of more in the direction that they were going in, so I enjoyed it. As far as his business ideas, he always seems to be coming up with different stuff. I liked what Jeff did with quote-unquote records. there's a lot of good music up on there. All the Taxpayers stuff, the Wild stuff is up there. And that's, you know, suggested donations.
Now, yeah. Sarah, don't let me project on you, but it seems to me with Rosenstock, his music is becoming less wild and wacky and more somber. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? And why do you think he's going in that direction?
I would definitely agree with that. I think maybe he's maturing. I don't know, he doesn't have to do all these crazy, crazy things in his songs. He can, these more focused ideas, but that's me projecting on him.
Well, fair enough. Jonna, which answer did you like best? We had two contestants which weren't huge Bomb Music Industry fans, but liked the idea, and one contestant that is a Bomb Music Industry fan and did like the idea.
I think, trying to remember the order now.
Sarah's contestant number one, Kira's contestant number two, and Samantha's contestant number three. Kira answered first, Samantha answered second, and Sarah answered third.
I think we'll give it to Samantha because she had the Bouncing Souls little section, and that was nice. Bouncing Souls are a great band, so let's do that.
Wow, Jono, that's two for Samantha so far, and we're only on two questions. Perhaps there's a love connection in the air. So, Jono, what did you think of this Jeff the Rosenstock song, or what do you think of the Bonnie Music Industry / Jeff Rosenstock model?
I actually haven't heard the song yet, but as far as the model goes and all that, Jeff and, you know, Bomb have always been not necessarily pioneers, but they've always been kind of fronting the whole different way of looking at things, especially from that scene of bands. You know, normally, like, bands will have to wait for someone like, you know, Nine Inch Nails or Radiohead or, like, you know, some, like, mainstream thing that people kind of think is overrated. But when a band like that, starting small, does that, you know, it gets a lot of eyes, and it's really cool and inspiring for a lot of people. I guess kind of going back to that Bouncing Souls thing, me personally, I'm a very album-oriented guy, so I kind of get, you know, I'm kind of over the, you know, we do one or two songs a month kind of thing, just because I like it all together. I like listening to everything in a row. Like, that's why I freak out when I'm driving somewhere and someone puts a song, like an album on shuffle, or like, you know, a different, like, oh, here's my playlist. I'm like, come on. Like, it's an album because it's an album, has a flow, you know? So regardless of that, I think the idea of having a tangible thing plus the songs later, it's kind of like a nice insurance policy. So I think it's pretty cool.
Well, Jono, I agree with you 100%. Jono, do you see the current singles market as violative of the album? Is the album dying?
I know, like, even, like, major labels and, like, a bunch of cheesy bands were doing this whole, like, well, EPs are really cool. Like, we were in a kind of crappy world a few years ago where, you know, we were around all those bands that were doing, like, the co-writing thing. And, like, I mean, now it's all, like, we all do lyric videos. And it's just kind of bullshit. Like, I'm kind of over all, like, the obvious, like, oh, you're supposed to do this. So for a while, like, every label thought they were so brilliant that they're going to do an EP and they were going to do that. And then out of nowhere, that kind of faded out. So bands, bigger bands, don't really do that anymore, which I actually like, because they could stop putting out as much bad music. But I think, you know, the album is the same thing as music. Like, it's not going to die. It's just going to evolve. So, you know, bands aren't just breaking up because of, oh, people aren't buying albums or going to shows, because there's other bands that are doing well while other bands are failing. So it's going to be the same thing, I think. It's going to fluctuate.
Well, excellent. And I'm getting a message from our producers here. It turns out that Kira got the first answer right, and Samantha got the second answer. Well, not right, but Jono selected Kira for the first answer and Samantha for a second.
There we go.
To correct that. So moving on for our third and final question of round one. This is a little bit more of a somber topic. As I'm sure the listeners know, almost about a year ago, the Russian collective Pussy Riot, three of the members were arrested for doing about a one-minute concert near a church or inside a church near the vestibule. They were arrested by the Russian government and basically prosecuted for blasphemy as well as obscenity and that kind of thing. Three of them were two of them were convicted. One was let out. Maria Ilokina, who has been in jail for a while, she went on a hunger strike because her parole hearing was denied. However, she ended her hunger strike yesterday. But the more important question is, I'll go to Sarah first, is, Sarah, is there anything that we, is it important to keep this in the news? Is there anything that we can do for some poor women in Russia? Or is this something that is almost more like a tabloid thing, is where we're just watching and can't do anything?
This is such a deep question. I think we're a lot more like spectators at this point. I think with any issue like this, the only real way you get any change done is to have connections directly with people involved or people on the ground. And like short of flying to Russia and meeting up with protesters or demonstrators, I don't know how much we can do. And it becomes this issue of, do we get involved with everything or do we have to let some things go? It's really tough, but I think we're just kind of watching it at this point. And if someone wants to organize something that connects us more directly with the situation, I think that would be amazing. But I know at the same time, I feel a little guilty now that I'm not the person doing that.
Fair enough. I will go to contestant number three, Samantha. Samantha, what do you think? Do you agree with contestant number one, Sarah, that there's really nothing that we can do at this point and we just have to watch, if you will?
I do agree with her. It's kind of hard to actually do something when there's a huge miles of distance between us. It's not like we're out there and we could actually riot with them or, you know, something like that. And, you know, it should be relevant on the television. It should be something that should be televised because it's something so important, you know.
I asked this question when the young ladies were first arrested. Samantha, would you be willing to go to jail for your, well, what we would call the First Amendment right, your freedom of speech?
I would. If I feel very, very passionately about something and it had to be said, I would probably most likely go to jail for it. But then again, I'm the type of person that would filter most of what I say before even saying it.
Well, fair enough. And we're going to move to contestant number two, Kira Wisniewski. Kira, is there anything that we can do for these young ladies at all? And if not, should we still keep this in the news?
I do agree with the other contestants in the fact that there isn't a lot of direct action that can be done, but I don't think that that means that no action can be done. I think that there's a lot of little things that we can do to keep the story in the news because it's like such an atrocity what has happened. And so I think it could even be like, I think it's really important and really great that Punk News keeps the story when developments are happening, keeps posting about it. I think that like really, even like small action things that could happen is that like, you know, you might not have HBO or maybe you do have HBO, but some of your friends don't have HBO, like have a screening at your house and have people come over and see this documentary about it. I actually tried, there was like a small period of time before HBO picked up the documentary where it was going to be at a film festival in DC and Punk News was going to possibly like help be part of it, but then it got picked up by HBO and blah, blah, blah. All this happened. But I think it's still like really important and really great, even though there can't be like direct action, obviously, that like small acts of keeping the story and the issue in the public kind of eye is important and a good thing that everybody can do, even if it's like little things like repost this on your Facebook wall, spread the like the Daily Show clip that happened, watch the documentary, talk about the documentary, and just keep this story relevant until, you know, it justice is served, even though that sounds really dramatic, but true.
Now, Kira, I believe you've seen the screener for the documentary. Briefly, can you tell us about it?
I think it's, yes, I have. And I think that it's really pretty great. It shows, it's like, so there's a lot of documentaries, you know, where the subject matter is interesting, but the documentary actually isn't that good. But this is a documentary that actually is really good. It's shot in a really compelling way. It talks to, like, all the main players. It shows the women in court. It shows their performance actually at the, you know, the point of contention in the cathedral or place of worship. I don't know if it's a cathedral. Anyway, and so it's a really compelling film, and I definitely would encourage everybody to check it out. Of course, there's some, like, you know, you can have, like, some criticism about it here and there, but overall, like, the overarching story is just so atrocious on what happened, and, like, what these women did is so brave and admirable and amazing that I definitely support them and think it's important that we keep talking about them.
Well, that's excellent. Jono, which contestant's answer did you like the best?
I think Kira definitely seems the most well-versed on the issue. So I'll pick her because she seems passionate and cool about it.
Well, very good. Well, think it over. We're going to go to some commercials real quick, and when we're back, we'll be in round two. So stay tuned for these special messages.
And step right up for your first chance to listen to Westchester, PA-based Nona. This is the first song from their new record. It is called Now and Then.
And we're going to start off with some news that's very personal to Jono. Fest 12, which is the annual punk rock festival down in Gainesville, Florida, has just announced some more acts. This year, the fest is about 6 days, with 2 days in the pre-fest, and then there's 4 actual days at fest itself. The acts announced now playing fest are Teenage Bottle Rocket, Bridge and Tunnel, David Lieb Heart Band, Young Turks, Permanent Bastards, The Reveling, 1994, Sainthood Reps, The Wild Like Bats, and The Swellers. Jono, are you excited to play the Fest 12?
Oh, hell yeah. We got to the point where we're just going to start confirming it every year because we don't want to miss out.
Have you played the Fest before then?
Yeah, this is our 5th or 6th year, actually.
Well, you're a Fest veteran, if you will, a Fest vet.
A Festerin. I got nothing.
And we'll go to contestant number 2 to start off with. Kira, are you excited for Fest 12? Are you going? What do you think of these lineup announcements?
Oh, I'm real, real excited about the Swellers playing Fest 12 this year.
Woo!
I am not going to Fest this year, sadly. It is so, so fun, and I'm a little sad about it, but it's like, you know, work, real life things. I'm a little concerned, honestly, and this might be just because I'm like turning 30 this year and I feel like an old person, but this shit is 6 days? That just sounds dangerous to me. It sounds like not healthy for anyone because everyone just parties so hard. Not that I'm throwing any shade on that at all, but it's just like 6 days of festing just sounds a little unsafe. But I'm sure it's going to be a tremendous time, and I'm a little jealous of everybody who's going.
Contestant number 3, Samantha. Are you going to fest, and is 6 days of dudes in short shorts, beards, sailor-style tattoos, is that too much, or is it just enough?
I am not going to fest this year, sadly. I would very much love to be at fest, but again, work has taken over, and I can't go. Is there enough PBR to pretty much deal with fest? I don't think so. 6 days is a bit much. I don't know how anyone's going to survive 6 days of festing. 3 days was enough because every single time I've come home from fest, I would need an entire day to recoup so that I could go back to work. I do love fest. It's great times. It's, you know, summer in October. Like, you know, what's better than that?
Samantha, what's one thing fest goers should do while they're down in Gainesville?
Please drink water and eat everything. There's a cart. I forgot where it was, but there's like pumpkin pie empanadas. It's amazing.
Well, that's excellent. Contestant number 1, Sarah, I believe you're affiliated with Fest, or you used to be affiliated with Fest. Is that correct?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time throughout the year being in touch with Tony and making sure little things happen. So,
what do you mean, like contract killings?
yeah, I have a mask and everything. I email bands a lot, so that's a fun thing I do.
Let's hear it from the source, someone who is going to live back down in there. 6 days. Can the kids handle it? Can the 25-year-olds handle it?
As a person that probably drinks about 2 cans of PBR and I feel great, I think I'll handle it fine. People that are constantly boozing throughout the day that, like, show up at 10 a.m. with, you know, a six-pack ready to go, I think are going to have a little bit of a struggle. But I think they have the strength in them to make it through.
Sarah, will you see the Swellers when they play down there this year?
If I'm not working, that's always... I'm at registration all the time, so if you come to registration, say hi to me. So if I'm available, I will definitely try to catch them.
Were you at Fest last year?
Yes.
Did you see the infamous dwarf show that ended with a fight?
Oh, no, but I heard about it, and everyone was so mad after, like, they only played for, like, 15 minutes or something like that.
That's because it's the dwarves. That's all you get. Jono, what do you think of contestants 1, 2, and 3's answers?
Let's go with Sarah, because you made her feel awkward about watching my band.
Jono, were you there last year?
Yeah.
Did you go to the infamous dwarf set?
No.
How was your set last year?
The dopest. in technical terms.
Did you guys do anything special?
What did we do? We got to play. That was cool. I remember the one, I still have weird flashbacks of, we dressed up as Wayne and Garth and Bill and Ted. And for some reason, the venue had some weird policy where you had to go through a metal detector to get in. And there's a line around the building, which is the first time we've ever done that as a band in our career. We were so pumped up. And then every individual person took about a minute to come in each. So we like dressed up and came out, and there was four people inside the whole venue. And then like halfway through our set, it was finally almost filled, and then it finally filled up, and then everyone left after we played. So yeah, I think Tony's been helping us ever since then, so we appreciate it.
Well, fantastic, Jono. So that went to Sarah, contestant number one, so that's congratulations for Sarah. So we're going to move on to our next issue. The band Isley recently had a Kickstarter for about $100,000 intended to support their tour. They only raised about $60,000 and then fell short. Here's what they said about the Kickstarter not going through. On that note, the tour is happening. We're excited about it, and I hope you guys are too. Just to be transparent, to ensure it could happen, we ended up having to borrow money from family for a good chunk of it, and our label is lending us money against future royalties for the rest. Both are painful. That's the reality of Isley doing support tours. Headlining tours are a little easier financially, but in any case, our nursing babies are too little to leave at home, and it would be insanely wrong and dangerous to try to tour with three or four tiny babies in a van. We have to be bigger, safer. We need a bigger, safer vehicle, which costs between $15,000 to $20,000. So I'm going to go to Sarah, contestant number one, first. Sarah, do fans have a responsibility to support a band's family? Or is this just a result of the current, I guess, financial structure for modern music?
I had to read this a couple of times. I think it's, if you have children, wouldn't you want to, like, take a hiatus or something? Like, I don't see the benefit of, I mean, obviously you don't want to leave your children alone, but I also don't think bringing them on tour is the answer. I don't.
Do you think it's fair for a band to ask the audience to pay for the tour and a ticket as well, or should a band figure out how to make the tour pay for itself through tickets?
I'm all for, if fans feel like they want to give to their favorite band, I'm all for it. I'm all for capitalism, whatever, what have you. I think Kickstarter is a really great tool, and hey, if all the power to them if they get people to give them money.
I'm going to go contestant number two, Kira Wisniewski. Kira, do you agree with Sarah or do you disagree?
I mean, I agree. It's kind of bananas that they are. I mean, so it's to like give full context to the listeners who may not know too much about Isley and the Kickstarter and whatever. So Sherry Dupree is wifey of Max Bemis, who is in Say Anything, who is the headliner of this tour. So it's like, to me, it seems like, not to be like too domestic or whatever, but it's like, couldn't in this situation on a tour, couldn't she possibly be with her baby and her boo on his headlining bus tour and not need $100,000 to tour? I do understand, though, when I say that at the same time, that there are possibly other babies involved. And then if that's the case, yo, take some time off. You know, many, many people do this. I think one of our commenters said something about, like, in an interview with The National recently, like, what that guy said, like, they actually took several years off because they were, you know, raising a family. Like, take some time to do that stuff. I understand, like, yes, I agree with the point of, you know, if you have a real little one at home, it's, like, pretty irresponsible to leave them. Sure, then don't leave them. And take some time off from touring and, you know, focus on your family. There is no shade in focusing on your family and, like, taking care of you. I mean, I'm sure, yeah, the fans want you to tour and want you to, like, produce new music all the time. But I think would also be pretty understanding of, like, wanting to take a year or two off to, like, do you and take care of your family.
Excellent. Samantha, do you agree or do you disagree? Are these children getting in the way of the tour, or is the family figuring out a way to take their children on the tour?
Well, I don't think the children is getting away in the tour. You know, you could still tour and have children. You know, they shouldn't be a burden on you. But I do agree with the girls in the sense that, you know, if you do have, you know, a little one to care for, you know, you have to think about making arrangements to deal with the fact that you have this child, either go on tour with them or do short, you know, trips, like weekend tours or like, you know, 4 or 5 days, you know, not like, you know, around the country type of thing. Because it is a little crazy that you're taking your entire family on tour with you for, you know, X amount of time.
The other thing I want to say about this that is also like a little absurd to me is that it's like, I just clicked on the Kickstarter briefly, that it's for a full US, UK, Australian tour. And it's like, yo, scale that back. If you're your baby, like kind of what Sam was saying, like keep it at home. Like, you know, that Bandmates Estate, like they're a husband wife duo and they had a baby and they still toured, but they, you know, kind of did what Sam was saying in the sense of like,
yeah, there's a lot of punk dads doing this. Like they'll go out for 4 days and then they'll go back to domestic life and deal with their baby and the wife or, you know, whatever. And I commend them for doing it because you're still doing punk and you're being responsible and being a father or mother to a child.
Indeed, I agree. I know Keith Morris frequently says that almost all the guys in Flag and the three other guys in Off all have children, so they do very short tours. Jono, I'm not sure you can relate to this because I imagine a Swellers tour being more like a Led Zeppelin or the Who tour with limitless groupies, destroyed hotel rooms, and fistfights with bouncers. So what do you think of a band asking for the fans to help them tour with their family?
We're always in a weird spot where do you want me to pick someone first and then explain? Or
well,
what
sure,
do you?
Sure, go ahead, Jono.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, I was going to pick Kira because she started with saying bananas, and I wrote that down. So I thought that was a good point. Because it's a great word, and also what she said was okay, I guess. But it is a weird situation. We know some people that are like semi-intertwined with them and their families and all that. I was very, very anti-Kickstarter when the whole thing started, because our band always prided ourselves on, if you want to make money, you play shows. You make merch and invest to make more money over time. You do this, yada, yada, yada. That was me before a 7-month break where I had to take a minimum wage job at Guitar Center and, you know, work like part time and, you know, make barely enough to pay rent, that whole thing. So it is appealing when, you know, if you didn't have a label, you didn't have any of those resources, well, hell, your fans could pay for it, right? I still think it's a little strange that being able to tour, let's say if they didn't have kids, that whole situation, bands do that. They actually will be like, hey, we need $50,000 to tour, like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it's total bullshit, like, to be completely honest. Not saying the Isley thing, I'm just saying, like, when other bands, you know, they have the resources to do it, or they could just choose to not do it and wait until their band, you know, gets enough steam going to afford it. But with Isley, the strange thing is, there's two sides. One side is, if you're on a label, the first thing you should be doing is hitting up your label and being like, hey, would you be able to help out with this? Like, you know, I know you only allot X amount of tour support per year, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's those kind of things should happen first. The other thing, too, is, like, you really need to find out, I guess, what your bigger goal as a band is. Because you could just be, you know, you could totally shatter your reputation by something simple like that. So I have a feeling there's a bunch of people who actually turn their backs on Isley because of that. You know, maybe some people think it's kind of like just rude to ask. Then, you know, the other side is, well, you do have a family and you are passionate about this thing that, you know, makes you you. Like, I know the feeling of, like, we just did like a week of shows with like Anti-Flag and Menzingers, and being able to play shows after not doing it for so long is one of the best feelings in the world. But, you know, to a lot of people, having a family is that. So when you try and do both at the same time, you have to do it a really smart, resourceful way. So I'm very gray area with the situation. You know, I'm not a fan of asking for money, but I'm also, you know, not a person with a whole family. But then it's, you know, like there's so many strange in-betweens with that whole situation.
Fair enough. I think that's an excellent in-depth response from the front line. My question for you, though, Jono, is can someone get in an almost pimp-like relationship with their label where the label lends them a bunch of money and at a usurious rates, if you will? Can that happen? Should you be worried for that?
Well, it depends on the label. Normally that kind of stuff comes in advance, where let's say like you're signed to a major label and they'll be like, all right, well, here's, you know, some bands we know will get like $250,000, that kind of crap. But a lot of the time they force you to spend it on like the actual production of the album, like the producer, recording, all that crap. And all that does is it's cementing the fact that you'll be in debt and you won't sell enough to make up for it. They just hope that a big name and all that stuff will pay itself off, which it most, I'd say 80% of the time doesn't happen. So when it comes to asking for more money, a lot of the time it is a strange thing, but it's also like, I guess, a courtesy thing, you know? Because if you could make a label look very, very bad if you're like, hey, we signed to this label. Also, hey, fans, give us money. Because it's like, oh, so you're saying your label's cheap? You know, it could come off that whole way too.
So you say it's all a big conspiracy of image is what you're saying. Moving on to our next question. The Weezer Cruise. Basically, Weezer is doing a 2014 cruise where you go on about a four-day trip from Florida to the Bahamas. Weezer's playing, Cat Power's playing, and they've announced their opening acts, which include Cat Power, Tori Emoy, Dive, The Cribs, Ash, Palma Violets, Bleached, Caveman, The Orwells, Ozma, The Relationship, and The Workaholics, Adam Devine. I think we'll start with Samantha. Samantha, what do you think of these musical cruises that are becoming more and more popular, and are you excited for the Weezer one in particular?
I'm actually not about cruises, especially musical cruises. I don't like rocking boats. So it's just about preference for me. I do like Weezer's older stuff, but I don't know how I feel about Weezer playing a cruise with all of these bigger bands and possibly playing new stuff.
Well, very good. Kira, what do you think of these musical cruises that they're doing, and what do you think of the Weezer ones lineup in particular?
Let me just start by saying that I have so much love in my heart for early Weezer, and it's my go-to karaoke. But this just seems a little silly to me. Like, real talk, right? Like, it's cruises itself are already so expensive. And, like, how many times have they done this now? Is this only the second time, or have they done this multiple times?
I think this is the second time.
It feels like it's been multiple times to me already, even though that's like kind of, yeah, that was my thing. I was like, I think it's only two, but I feel like it's happened a lot. There was like a brief period of time where I was like really considering going to the Boys to Men cruise, neither here nor there, and the fact of talking about going to like music cruises, but they're just so expensive. And I get that it might be a pretty fun fan experience and all, but overall, I would say not into it.
Sarah, does a cruise enhance seeing a band live, or is it basically the same as seeing them in a venue?
Well, I've never been on a cruise, so I don't even know how this works.
Well, generally, the way it works is basically, it's just like a regular cruise where you get on at one port and you go to an island and you hang out there and you hang out on the boat. But also right. During the day, they have a lot of different shows by different acts. Probably have like two or three Weezer sets, maybe only one, and all these other bands too. So it's almost like a music festival on the boat between.
So it's not like the destination, there's a show.
No, the show's usually on the boat itself.
Okay. I feel like I've heard this gimmick like a lot of times now. Kind of what Kira was saying about, I feel like they've done this more than one other time. I can't plan far enough to February 2014 quite yet, so I don't I don't know. I'm not impressed.
I would also say, like, just to add on to this whole thing, like, I've never been on a cruise ship, but I know that I get real motion sick. Like, I actually with Sam when we saw
Thousand Souls.
And I was so fucking ill that whole show. It was pretty miserable. And the Bouncing Souls are, like, number one in my heart. And that was, like, not a fun time for me.
Well, the other thing about the booze cruises that happen in New York, is it a really good idea to have a lot of drunk people on a boat? And especially when it's rocking and, or, you know, they're doing whatever they're doing in the pit, whatever. Yeah, nothing's bad's happened so far, but I don't think it's that great of an idea.
John, which contestant's answer did you like the best? Contestant number one, Sarah, contestant number two, Kira, or contestant number three, Samantha?
Let's do Samantha.
Fair enough. Now, John, what do you think of the music cruises that are becoming sort of popular lately?
I think it's, you know, it's the same way as, like, you look at the music industry and you look at how bands are looking for like publishing deals. That's kind of paying the bills, you know. So, and just weird alternate ways of actually like getting music out there, or like different sources of revenue and all that crap. I went on a cruise once and I thought it was going to be this like glamorous Caribbean vacation, but all it is just an old country buffet on the water. Just like a bunch of strange overweight people that love eating free food all day and getting wasted.
Oh,
and
it's like a Melvin show.
Yeah. Well,
Jono, who would be on the Swellers cruise?
Oh, hell yeah. Let's see. I'd have Not a Surf on, because I'm obsessed with them and I always talk about them. Then it'd be cool to get like a bunch of bands, like something like Lemuria, Iron Sheik, Small Brown Bike would be sweet, just because I want to watch them all the time. Get Up Kids, Saves the Day, Us, and Weezer playing only Pinkerton. and then I'm trying to think of one more band. Now, let's do Millencolin, because that was my like love of childhood.
I believe you've just described Punk News editor Chris Moran's heaven. Food, Millencolin, Weezer. The guy would die right there of happiness.
So. I didn't say a veil. So.
So we'll have to do a spoiler thing. Chris, don't listen, because you will die if you listen to this podcast. Very last question. So girls, think hard. Sarah, we'll start with you. Propagandhi is releasing their first album. Well, Fat Records is re-releasing Propagandhi's first album, How to Clean Everything, for its 20th anniversary. Chris Hanna of Propagandhi said, "Maybe it's the bath salt talking, but I have come to believe that there is value in having something that haunts you until you are dead." How to Clean Everything is a very different record than current Propagandhi. So my question is to you, Sarah, do you like Propagandhi now? Do you like How to Clean Everything? And what do you think of this re-release?
Okay, I've been worried about this all day. Real honest truth here. I've heard maybe two Propagandhi songs in my life, so so I really have nothing to say.
What's your opinion of re-releases in general? Are they a good thing, or are they a waste of fans' money?
Oh,
like Sarah.
See, if there's a bonus feature, like if you get something for it, I think it's great, but. Otherwise, I'd rather hear something new than re-releasing old stuff.
Well, very good. Kira, what does Propagandhi mean to you? Are you excited for this re-release?
Propagandhi, what does it mean to me? That's such a question. No, I think that this is a cool thing, I think, for fans. And I think that re-releases are mostly for fans. So for people who are, like, real into Propagandhi, they're going to eat this up and it's going to be great. I hate to bring everything back to the Bouncing Souls, but, you know, that's what happens in my life. So they recently did this re-release, or they're doing it right now, of the Green Ball Crew, which was, like, their first EP that, like, they admittedly says, like, sounds like shit, but, like, you can pre-order it, and they're only making vinyl for whoever pre-orders it. So I kind of hemmed and hawed about it a little bit, but then I was like, ah, fuck it, I'm going to buy it, and so I did. But so I think in some of that kind of, like, sentiment is kind of what Chris is saying in this quote, is that, like, he's not super proud of this album. I'm totally projecting here. But, you know, it's haunting him. But he's into, you know, he recognizes that it was like kind of like their roots, their beginning, and that people will appreciate this kind of re-release. So I think that it's a good thing for the fans. And, you know, I'm not throwing shade on people who want to do celebrating things like being around for 20 years, because that's pretty fucking great. So good for them.
Samantha, contestant number three, you've got the last word. What do you think of this Propagandhi re-release? Are you excited for it?
I love Propagandhi. I especially love their later stuff, but I do like this album. I'm all for re-releases. You know, it's pretty much with re-releases, because I'm an avid vinyl collector. you know, it's pretty much, would you rather spend money on a re-release than spend $100 on eBay trying to get an OG, you know? Especially with this re-release, there's going to be bonus material on it, so I'm for it.
Samantha, what does Propagandhi represent for you?
pretty much positive, pissed off music, and I love it.
Well, very good. Jonna, which contestant's answer did you like the best?
Samantha, because she seems like she knows her shit about propaganda, which is awesome. Go ahead,
Jonna. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm actually in the same boat where I actually like their later stuff more, too, which I guess makes me less punk, but more super fucking metal. I think it just has so much intense heart, and like no bands are doing what they do, and no bands have the balls to do what they do. As far as re-releases and all that, I think it's cool. Like, it's cool to celebrate your roots. Like, I'm in the same boat where I hate like our first record. Like, I think it's just brutal, but I was also like 15 when it happened. So, I mean, it's a lot different when you're a band starting on Fat Records and have an awesome punk rock album. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good for them.
Well, excellent. Well, Jonna, think about all the girls' answers for all the questions. We're going to go to some commercials, and when we come back, you're going to make your selection as to which contestants' answers you like the best overall. Are you ready, Jonna?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back after these messages.
Hey everybody, this is John O'Diener from The Swellers. I am a big music fan, and I assume you are too, and boy, do I have the coolest album that you'll ever hear. Here, I can't talk. Don't listen to me, but listen to my band, The Swellers. The album's called Running Out of Places to Go, and there's a bunch of super smash hits on it, including Hands. Feels like song Running Out of Places to Go. How important are the words in one ear? Already forgot them. So many metaphors that could sink the fucking ship. I'll see you all at the bottom. Let me in. I didn't get my mind straight. You like being sad? Well, good. We got a lot of that kind of stuff. But here is a song that makes our band name not about penises. It's called Making Waves.
To order Running Out of Places to Go, please visit theswellers.bandcamp.com, where you can choose from two convenient formats, including digital MP3 album in one convenient payment of $4, or you can order the exclusive 10-inch yellow vinyl for one convenient payment of $10. Sorry, no CODs. Order today. Supplies are limited. Price does not include shipping or handling. I still think it's amazing how much baggage I've taken. I used to let things fly. Now I'm sick, it's contagious. Write that shit and erase it. I'm on the other side. The I'm done taking are back for the final section of the Punk Connection with Jono Diener of the Swellers. Jono, I've heard that you've got a new album coming out pretty soon. Can you tell us a little bit about the album?
Yeah, it's coming out in the fall. Fingers crossed sometime in September, but honestly, we don't really know at the time. We recorded it with Mark Hudson. Actually, he lives 20 minutes away from me. He lives in Fenton, Michigan, and he did Saves the Day. He's working on Taking Back Sunday stuff. He's pretty much just been like the local Flint dude. That's like the music scene we grew up in, so he knew pretty much everyone we looked up to growing up and recorded a bunch of great records. Let's see what else. It's going to be on No Sleep Records. We're pretty excited about that. It's a nice, perfectly sized label for us with one of my friends who runs it, so we can pretty much do whatever we want for the first time, and there's no real restrictions. My friend Ben Sears is doing the artwork for it, which I'm really proud of. He's one of my favorite artists. He does stuff for like Lemuria, Into It Over It, all that. And sonically, it's a nice departure from what we used to do. It's very like, I guess, Weezer B-side meets early Foo Fighters and Get Up Kids mixed with us, if that makes sense. So the whole record is very raw. There's no like replaced drum sounds, barely any autotune on the whole thing, just super raw, and hopefully people dig it. I think it's a nice, definitely a legitimate mature album compared to the other stuff we used to do.
And you know what it's going to be called yet?
Yeah, I've had the name for a long time, but we're just waiting to announce it with the album artwork as well.
Fair enough. Are there any themes that circle around the record?
A lot of it's like, for the first time from my point of view, like I do a lot of the lyrics, like Nick and I are kind of 50-50 on this one. I almost feel like it potentially did a little more. I'm not sure, but a lot of it's just a strange, like overwhelming life changes record. Kind of just dealing with, and this is kind of super lame to say out loud, especially now that I'm on this show of all things, but I guess kind of the whole like being single and trying to like for the first time witness all the awkward social life things that you don't normally get to deal with, and actually writing about it for the first time. Like when I was younger, like I always wanted to be super political and do all this stuff, but realistically the stuff I'm going through now, you know, like getting through a normal day is a lot, you know, a lot harder now than it is like, oh man, like I'm 15 and I don't pay taxes. I hate the government, you know? So it's a lot of personal themes, but I think a lot of people can relate to it because, you know, life is pretty fucking awkward, and I think we could all relate to that.
Well, Jono, that's why we had you on the show, and maybe we'll solve your single problem. Jono, you've had time to think it over. You listened to all the girls' responses to the questions. Jono, which contestants would you like to take out for a night on the town?
I'm gonna do a nice option four. I'm just going to write in the contestant I wanted to be on the show but never showed up. His name is Armando, and he's also a Punk News contributor.
What a twist! So, yeah. Jono, you're selecting Armando, who wasn't even on the game show, take night out on the town.
Yeah, he's been working out a lot. He posts on his Tumblr what workout he does every single day, and it takes up my feed, and I think it's just really cool. And I like just seeing pictures that he takes of himself, and he talks about ska a lot, so it's, you know, pretty much my ideal soulmate.
Well, what can I say? I'm shocked. Girls, I'm sorry we couldn't find a love connection for you this evening, but perhaps we'll find one later. Good luck and best of luck on your quest for love. Meanwhile, Jono, congratulations. You and Armando are going to go out on a date together, sponsored by Pop Punk Records. You'll start by going to a bubblegum bar. The dinner will be topped off by a dessert of pure sugar. After that, you'll make your way to a pop punk show where you'll listen to the same song played 35 times in a row. Then you'll head out for a nightcap where you'll make bland, harmless advances towards one another and then split up without ever actually acting like adults. Jono, thanks again for playing the Punk Connection, and we'll see you guys all next week. Congratulations to you and Armando. Woo! And that wraps up this edition of the Punk News Podcast. As always, the opinions expressed by the individuals appearing on the Punk News Podcast do not in any way express the opinions of punknews.org itself. We want to thank the bands that we played on the podcast tonight, including The Swellers, Nano, and The Disconnects. We also want to thank Jono Diener for showing up and being such a good sport. As always, you can reach us at podcast at punknews.org if you want to send us a message or hate mail or love mail or sexy nudes. If you're over 18, that is. That's podcast@punknews.org. Thanks again, and be sure to tune in next week because we're doing a very special 150th episode. So stay tuned for that, and we will see you next week.
This has been a Perv Griffin Enterprises production.